Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 148 of Constructive Criticism. Not episode 2, like some of you might think, weirdly enough.
Why would they think that?
Because didn't episode 1 get posted on MTG?
Oh, yeah. I saw a tweet about that.
You definitely wouldn't think it was episode 2 after you said it was episode 148.
Well, I mean, obviously, but like they could be like all excited for episode 2, right? Like, they could have listened to episode 1 and be like, oh, man, that podcast was terrible. I can't wait to listen to episode 2.
No, they could be like, that podcast was great. I want more content like that. And then they could listen to this and be like, this doesn't sound the same.
No, it sounds completely different. By the way, who's that, Casey?
That's some guy that showed up here.
Yeah.
He looks kind of familiar to me, but I don't know.
You guys needed an extra, so, you know.
Yeah, so you just filled in. Hey, yep. Michael, how's it going?
I'm doing good.
How was your impromptu second vacation?
Oh, it was sweet. I mean, it wasn't really sweet. I was in South Dakota, so it was like,
what?
It was like vaguely sweet.
You didn't say Dakota, right?
I did say South Dakota.
Oh, you did say Dakota?
Dakota, indeed.
So what brought you to South Dakota?
You said it wrong, too.
No, I didn't.
My grandfather lives in South Dakota, so.
Give him my deepest condolences.
I mean, that would be like funnier if he wasn't like 95.
That's why you're a Minnesota fan.
Yeah. You know, some things you just don't get a choice on in life, and that's one of them, sadly.
Speaking of which, how's that fantasy football thing coming along?
It's great, but I can't show you just yet.
So for those who don't know, Michael has agreed to be the commissioner of the league. So
agreed is a strong word.
It's been agreed that Michael will be the commissioner of our league.
Yeah, Michael might not have agreed, but he was agreed upon among some number of people. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We are excited to have everybody who's listening this week. And we're excited to talk about the Pro Tour. The Pro Tour is this weekend, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And then, obviously, we'll do a normal training grounds. But yeah, we're excited to take it on this. Don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg, where you can support the podcast directly. And let's go into our first segment, which is hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is really the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And you should always be striving to, you know, be on the up and up.
Yeah,
have the information.
Okay.
And be honest.
Sure, yeah. I mean...
And also be improving.
Yeah, on the up and up.
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
So this week, I'll go first. So every week on the show, we obviously want to tell you like what we've done and how we feel moving forward and like what we're trying to achieve at the time. This week, I focused on playing right. So I played a mid-range deck, a control deck, and an aggro deck this week in the three tournaments that I played in. And I went 11-1-3. And it felt really good.
That was good. I mean, variety is the spice of life, and also, like, not pigeonholing yourself in Magic will give you a much better idea as to how to play against a lot of different kinds of decks.
That 3 is a 2 as far as the DCI is concerned, because one of it had to concede to Casey because somebody had to win the tournament.
Yeah. And, you know, anything's possible. I might go to Indy. You don't know.
But honestly, it felt really good just, like, playing different decks, trying to do well, and when you think about lines, I don't know. I've really enjoyed Magic over the last couple weeks, and I'm just kind of really happy at where I'm at and, like, being able to, like, slow my game down a little bit and think about things and, like, being focused. One thing that you see a lot of players who are starting to improve do is they'll start to play really, really fast to try and get their opponent. And I can't emphasize enough how, like, not worth it that is, because you'll just mess up yourself some number of the time. So, like, playing at blazing fast speeds just, it doesn't really help you that much. I would actually say it's usually a detriment. So something that I've, you know, done for the last couple months is try to slow down my game, and I feel like I'm doing really well at it. I'm really happy with, like, my performances over the last couple weeks. And, yeah. Casey, what about you?
Just trying to stay positive and try to get something out of every match that I play. You know, during this time of the year or this time of the set release cycle, people are playing all kinds of crazy things, and, you know, we're in modern PPTQ season, so you're going to play against some pretty off-the-wall decks. But, and I used to get frustrated by stuff like that because I didn't feel like it was valid testing, but I've been trying to get something out of it. How does this deck work? How is it similar to other decks? Can I get something out of the deck building principles of this deck, or can I get something out of how to play against this deck? And, you know, picked up a little bit here and there, and I think that it's just kept me in a better mood playing Magic also.
Yeah, I also really liked your bounce back. You were like, you didn't do too well at the PPTQ this weekend, and immediately wanted to play more Magic, which is not something that's atypical of you. And it was endearing, is probably the right word. Like, I don't know, it made me want to play more Magic. Like, yeah. It was exciting. Like, I was excited to play Magic because you were excited.
Yeah, I was kind of frustrated at that PPTQ. I played a deck that wasn't very great for the tournament. I hit matchups that were really tough, and I played kind of bad at a couple of points. But there was a GPT that happened right after at the same store. And, you know, I went and scrounged up a standard deck to be able to play in it and ended up, you know, having a good time.
Yeah, I just think that, like, being willing to bounce back is really admirable, and it's really easy to get frustrated, and you, I don't know, you, like, left that tournament really happy where you could have left it really upset, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just trying to get something out of the experience.
I think in general, just taking Magic sometimes is like a learning experience rather than like, this is the event and I have to do well because I've tried to prepare and I put pressure on myself. When, like, you know, over short periods of time, even good preparation sometimes isn't enough. Like, you're at a PPTQ, you lose twice and you're done. So, you know, it's going to happen sometimes. And I think just being able to, like, step back and say, okay, that's fine. I didn't do as well as I'd hoped today, but it doesn't really mean anything other than got to play again next week, I guess.
Michael, what about you? How did you improve at Magic this week?
I've just been trying to, like, play a bunch of standard, kind of get a feel. You know, now that the PT has given us a bunch of new decks and a bunch of new ideas, maybe even more so than, like, actual lists. Just kind of getting a feel for, like, what other people are playing, what cards I'm seeing popping up that I like or I think are powerful, and trying to go from there.
Okay. We did play a lot of standard today.
Yeah.
How many games do you think that we three combined total?
Well over 100.
Well over 100.
I mean, at that point, I don't think, whatever.
Yeah, enough. A lot. And, you know, watching each other and talking about decks and matchups, I thought it was a really productive day.
Yeah, I feel pretty interested in the standard format. Obviously, I don't feel the way that we felt back with, like, in the PTQ days where, like, we had weeks and weeks to prepare for events. And, like, I don't know. It felt different. I hope that for you and Michael, who are qualified for the RPTQ, you guys, like, got a lot out of it. But, yeah, it was an exciting run. Let's go right into, so every week on the show, we do invite people on the Patreon to submit questions or comments. I haven't been posting it lately because of the length of the show. If you do have something you want to say, never fear, like, going in there and posting something on the Patreon page if you're a patron of the show. You know, just shoot us a message or whatever. We'd be happy to talk about it on the show. I haven't been posting it because of, like, what the shows are doing and stuff like that, but you are always invited to do that yourself if I don't post something. The next segment is brought to you by Patreon, and that's Card of the Week. Every week on the show, if we can, we want to give out some cards. I know this is going to be anticlimactic because it's a common, but I think that no other card deserves this. Like, maybe Emrakul, but I actually think this card is more important.
I agree. I think that it was sort of the defining card of a lot of decks that did very well at the Pro Tour.
We missed
on it wide.
Yeah, it was part of a package that, like, sometimes included Emrakul. My biggest takeaway from seeing some of the Pro Tour decks is that I actually felt like a few of the teams maybe went a little bit too big. Like, if they'd been slightly under where they were in terms of Emrakul emphasis, they actually would have been better off.
Yeah, the card that we're talking about is Grapple with the Past. This card is a 1G1 for an instant. Put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard, and then you may return a creature or a land card from your graveyard to your hand. Honestly, so we're giving out 4 of these to Todd N. Todd, thank you so much for being a patron of the show. We really appreciate it. You can be eligible to win Card of the Week by just, you know, shooting us by being a patron of $3 or more. Here's the thing. Like, this card, I'm going to get so much crap from this from Matt. It was before the Pro Tour. Somebody had mentioned this card in our Facebook group, and I thought to my, it was one of, you know, it was the morning, I was taking a shower, and I thought about this card a lot. Like, it was one of those, it was one of those shower cards for me. It's like, Spencer, that's what Spencer does in the shower, in case anybody wants. He just stands under the hot water, and he thinks about cards. Michael stands under the hot water and cries with a medal around his neck.
It's the cold water, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I like it to feel more depressing.
but honestly, like, I thought about this card a lot, and I was like, is it, like, Anticipate? Like, that's probably how good... This card's probably as good as Anticipate. It's probably, like, something that you could build as, like, a 2 of or a 3 of in your deck. And I was, like, pretty ready to, like, test out some different things. And then, like, it was crazy. The whole dynamic of the Pro Tour was changed by this. And also Vessel of Nascency, which was... interesting to see specifically Team Pantheon and like their thoughts on the card, because if you actually watched the Pro Tour, the first play in Constructed for both players on camera was turn 1 Vessel of Nascency. But like, honestly, Grapple with the Past just turned out to be like 2 mana, draw exactly the card I want most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, in the very late game, it was like recurring your big Eldrazi, your Emerge guys, right? You would emerge an Emerge guy with an Emerge guy to get the maximum mana discount and then regrow the other Emerge guy.
Yeah.
Well, and people were, like, looping their Eldrazi.
Right, but the nice thing is that it's sort of like an Anticipate regrowth hybrid, right? Where, like, I don't know that you would even want regrowth as an effect, but when you're getting the value in the early game, starting to help you enable Delirium, and, like, and then in
and
the
fix,
late game...
fix your,
like,
mana a little.
Right.
And, like, it was just crazy.
Right. It's a very versatile card, and it's a card that, like... It's just good in a lot of different situations.
So that segment is brought to you by Patreon.com. Don't forget to check it out at Patreon.com/CCMTG. And if you haven't watched the Pro Tour, like, you missed out, because like, Grapple with the Past was everywhere. And honestly, it really was, for me, the defining card of the Pro Tour. Todd, if shoot us a message. I'll probably ship you something else because it's a common. But yeah, x4 Grapple with the Past to you to build, you know, to fill out your collection. And we really appreciate it. The next segment is brought to you by Five Color Combo, which is Power Rankings. And don't forget to check out the classic tokens at fivecolorcombo.com. You can use the link in the show notes to specifically support us. They give us our own personal link. And if you haven't seen the classic tokens, they're from the GoFundMe or was it a Kickstarter? I think it was Kickstarter.
I forget which one it was.
Yeah, but they're sweet.
They're pretty cool. Like, yeah, if you're looking for a bunch of tokens, they're certainly unusual and I think quite nice.
Yeah, very cool, unique. Really, they seem to be very high, like, production quality.
Right.
Yeah, I've been close to snapping them off for like my cube now.
Yeah,
a little bit, because like they're something I would like to own over time. Like, they're very cool.
So. This week, how did we do the power rankings? Because we actually don't normally do them for the Pro Tour, but I wanted to this time.
Yeah, so basically, for the 18 to 20 point decks for Constructed, they got 1 point. The 21 to 23 point decks got 2 points. And then the 24 points in better decks got 3 points. And then each deck in the top 8 got 4 points, just to put more of an emphasis on them.
Sure. Which is kind of crazy. That means that some decks did get points twice.
No.
Oh, did you not give them the points twice?
No.
Oh, okay. Good. That's even better. So we have a tie with two very similar decks at 14 points, and that's Jund and Temurge.
It's a Temurge.
Okay. So these two decks, very similar. They're Emerge decks.
The Jund deck is a Delirium deck.
Well,
the Jund deck is a true Delirium deck. The Temurge deck is a little bit...
Lines are blurred, but...
Okay.
I would say it's much more similar to Green-Black Delirium than it is to that deck.
Okay. I can buy this.
So the other thing is, after playing a bunch of games today, I wouldn't necessarily say that all of the Temur Emerge decks are really all that similar either. I mean, there are some decks that very much are Emrakul decks.
I would assume that you didn't put Owen's deck in this category, right?
In the Temurge?
Yeah.
I did.
You did, okay.
But, I would say that, like, ultimately, that's a little more of a... A little bit more of, like, a Emrakul deck specifically, whereas the...
Yeah, the East-West Bowl. I mean, there were...
Right,
there
the East-West Bowl one was like a little more like three drop into Elder Deep Fiend style.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there were a lot of different ways people were building decks. And just for the sake of consolidation, some decks that aren't really the same are considered the same.
Well, right. You'd have to break everything down into like, you know, yeah, Team East-West Bowl, Team Pantheon, and, you know, whatever. It would be a pain.
So what are you guys... What are your guys' thoughts on like these two decks? Like... honestly, like the Jund deck looks sweet. It seems quite powerful. It just Distended Mindbender in general seems quite good.
Yeah, so I was looking at it a little bit and saw it play out a couple of times on camera, and like it's definitely powerful. I would say it's a little bit clunky, and your card quality, like the issue with sort of all of these emerge decks in my estimation at this point is just that your card quality, I wouldn't say it's like low as much as it's inconsistent. You play these really powerful cards with incredible synergy that like sometimes it all comes together and what you're doing feels way better than anything your opponent is doing. And sometimes you're like a little bit off and you're casting Pilgrim's Eyes and wondering, you know, why you chose to do this.
Yeah, why you did this to yourself.
Yeah, that is my early impression of the Emerge decks as well, is that like you really need to have both in any like good hand.
Do you feel that way about Jund and Teemer? Because I know that you guys just said that the Delirium deck was a Delirium deck. The Jund deck was a Delirium deck, but like it is playing like Distended Mindbait Breaker, Pilgrim's Eye, Kozilek's Return, Grapple with the Past. Like it's got a similar shell.
Yeah, it does have a small Emerge package with the Pilgrim's Eyes and the Mindbenders. But it's mostly playing things to fuel its graveyard to get maximum value out of its Ishkanas and things like that. And I think that this deck is a little bit less likely to... Or the Jund deck is a little bit less likely to have the awkwardness that the Teemer deck can have. But it's a little bit less powerful, I would say, also.
This deck falls a lot closer on the spectrum to, like... It's like if kind of Green-Black Delirium and Teemer Emerge had a baby. This is kind of where you'd end up, right? It's like you get these sort of, you really, this deck, I'm sure I haven't played a lot with this deck. I think I've only played a couple of games at this point, but I have to imagine that with this much emphasis, like they're playing three vessels, multiple Pilgrim's Eyes, you know, Planeswalkers, you know, all of this. I have to imagine you're getting Delirium really fast, and I'm sure this is like one of the best Traverse the Ulvenwald decks at any point in any format.
Based on the decision to play three Ishkanas, I definitely think that they have to be getting Delirium very quickly to make that a viable strategy.
Right, but like the whole, like, they're playing Liliana, right? So you're playing like Liliana, Traverse, Ishkana, and Mindbender. So I feel like you're going to have a lot of draws where, like, you're playing sort of a fair deck until all of a sudden it's not fair anymore and your opponent is just getting slaughtered by, like, Ishkana into 5/5 Mind Twist you.
The Teemer deck, to me, surprisingly, Spencer likes a Teemer deck. It's quite good. I think that when you look at all of the decks on paper, I know that Casey and Matt also feel this way. Like, it's the one that looks like a deck.
Yeah, specifically the East-West Bowl version
of the deck. Yeah, sorry, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, there are certain versions of the deck that look so bizarre to me. I mean, not the least of which, Owen's deck. Some of the deck-building decisions...
I think we're all on the same page with not especially liking Owen's deck.
No, but I think that we all do like...
Yeah, Andrew Brown's deck and the rest of the guys on that, you know, on that East-West Bowl, it's very, like, I would say it's very linear. Like, it's very much like you can look at the deck list and see how they hope games are going to play out, right? Like, it's like, okay, on one you do this, on two you do this, on three you do this, on four you Elder Deep Fiend, Wrath your opponent.
I think this is my fallback deck for the GP. I think that if I, like, fall back on a deck, it will be this one. There's a few other things that I want to try, but, like, the Teemer... I think, Casey, you're probably... It sounded like you were at the same point where it's, like...
Yeah.
If, like, I need fall back on something, it's going to be this.
Yeah. I think I'm closer to falling back on it than you are at this point. I think that you've got a few more things ahead of it than I do. But, yeah, I'm in a similar place that I know that this deck is good. I know that it's safe. I know... I've been learning how to play it.
Yeah.
And Shaman of the Forgotten Way is more powerful than it looks.
It has literal, like... rug colors, so I don't know that like it's gonna be that hard.
sure.
to get me, but...
Yeah, there are a few things that I want to test. I'm not particularly in love with Primal Druid as a card.
There's also, the fact that it only plays five red sources total is pretty interesting. Like, I understand that, like, between Grapple with the Past and it's it is trying to get Primal Druid to, like, get there a lot. But it's interesting.
This deck, though, is a true Emerge deck. There's no Delirium Elements. There's yes. sideboarded Traverse the Oven Walds, presumably for longer, grindier matches. That's my understanding.
That's what I've been using them for.
I think that will be the deciding factor for me if I want to play this deck, is once I get to start playing sideboarded games and, like, see how things go. Because the sideboard has a lot of very interesting decisions in it.
It looks like, so they have, like, Planeswalkers, they have Traverses, and they have an Emrakul plus an Ishkana. So it looks like, to me, one of the plans in, like, against decks with more removal is to have the decks with a bunch of removal keep in their removal, and then you side out your most linear cards and try to just settle into, like, a grindier game where you're just trying to go over the top of what they're doing.
So coming in next, we have Black-White Control with 17 points. There was 9 finishes for the deck. It was 7% of the day... Let's talk about something really quick. So... the Temur deck was 6% of the day one meta, had a 64.7 conversion rate. The Jund deck was 4% and had an 83.3 conversion. That's huge.
So just to be clear, that means there were 7 people who made day 2 with the deck out of 8 that played it.
But one thing I think we should also be clear about, the Jund deck in particular had really strong limited players playing it as well. Which certainly bumps up, like, the day 2 finish,
sure.
right? Just that, like, I think that was Team Eureka were the only people on the deck that got lumped into that category. So, like, the day 2 percentage is weighted by limited. It's not a purely constructed.
That's true. Measure. There is limited parts yeah, to it.
Good point.
The Black-White deck had a 7% of the day 1 meta and had a 61.9 conversion rate, coming with 17 points. This is the deck that won the Pro Tour. I don't know. Matt's pretty high on the idea of playing Avacyn and Kalidus in the same deck, and that is certainly a version of Black White that we haven't seen a lot of. It's interesting. It's an interesting deck. I mean, the guy literally won his last 9 games of Magic to win the Pro Tour, and that's a strong thing.
That's not nothing, yeah. right? There's something to be said for, like, 3 of the toughest, you know, opponents he's probably ever really had to play against in that kind of setting, and just casually wins 9 in a row.
Yeah, like just lined him up, knocked him down.
Yeah, exactly. That speaks well for what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, Transgress the Mind is something that he was playing in his main deck that seems really strong right now. Overall, like, the deck is just really strong. A lot of people say Liliana's, like, I mean, Liliana's insane. Can we just, like, be real? There were so many cards that, like, did well, but whether it was Emrakul or Liliana or Grapple with the Past, or, you know, what's the blue Emerge guy?
Elder Deep Fiend.
I agree, though. Liliana looked very impressive just about every time she was on camera. She ultimates so easily.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that she's in decks with all these removal spells, and then she, you know, makes things not able to attack her, and sometimes can kill things on her own, it's just like, you extend, and then you get languished, and then she ultimates, and you die.
Yeah, I think that card is basically forced Mono White out of the format.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Being completely honest, I think that card by itself has made having to play a bunch of X1s not a viable strategy.
Well, we talked about this earlier today, right? If you as a Mono White player are on the draw and your opponent curves any removal spell into Liliana,
the game is over.
You can't, you don't have draws in your deck that beat that. I mean, barring, like, you know, all your Thalia's Lieutenants or something, right? I mean, that's about what it's going to take.
So, up next on the list, after the deck that won the Pro Tour, is Green Red Ramp, coming with 22 points. This deck, they're two very different versions, by the way. One of them being the Japanese version, and one of them being Reed Duke's version. Very different decks. I'm not sure. I mean, we kind of talked about it, I think, 2 weeks ago, that, like, this style of deck in some way was probably going to do well at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, it just going big, going over the top, like, traditional style control decks are not really in vogue for the most part. Like, the control decks are all playing creatures, and, you know, it's not, like, Flash or even, like, Wrath your board control for the most part. So ramp kind of fills a similar role in the metagame.
Yeah, if you
of being the big deck.
Yeah, also if you remember back to like Kessick Wolf Run ramp, that deck oftentimes, you know, people remember it kind of weirdly because that deck very much played the control role in that format. For the majority of the time that it was there, you know, in the Delver standard, right? The control deck was really that deck. And I think that this, like the green, like these green red decks, whether it was the Goggles ramp deck or the Eldrazi ramp decks, they really do fill that role quite a bit when it's needed.
I can see that. This deck in particular is very much, it's sort of the Japanese style green red ramp deck, which I think is playing like three Ishkanas, four Hangerback Walkers, and three Emrakuls, its only creatures.
It's very similar to the Goggles ramp deck in that respect.
Right, but like it just feels like it's the kind of deck where it like kind of, you know, survives in the early game, slams Ishkana to just gum up the board, and then just plays like Emrakul into Emrakul until you've, you know, suicided all of your creatures, and then it attacks you and you die.
I when I look at this deck, I'm like literally shocked that they're not playing the land that
Drownyard Temple?
Yeah, they're literally playing Galactic Defiance and Tormenting Voice.
Yeah, I'm also kind of surprised by that. I would be curious as to what the reason would be.
They didn't want to play as many colorless lands.
Yeah, that would be my instinct as well, because they're playing, you know, Fiery Impulses. Because it's
all the double red spells.
Well, yeah. They're also playing zero Sanctums, which I have to think I would want over Fiery Impulse. Over Drownyard Temple.
Well, not really, because you're only playing one Eldrazi. Well, I mean, you're only playing one Eldrazi that triggers it to get your Emrakul.
Maybe. Yeah, that certainly could be the case. I think this deck is pretty interesting. And, like, I think basically a lot of people found that if you're able to get Delirium reliably, Traverse the Ovenwald is just absurdly powerful.
Yeah, and then the Reed Duke version is, like, kind of your typical ramp deck. But he is playing the Drownyard Temple, Vessel, Grapple with the Past. Like, a very interesting take on kind of changing the way that you ramp a little bit.
I think this is much more of, like, a mid-rangey deck. I mean, it is ramp because of the lack of a better name, I feel like. But, I mean, you're playing Vessels and
I think
Gathers.
I think it's Green Red Control is the right name, but nobody will ever use it.
Well, a lot of times...
Because it sounds weird.
Doesn't it look like he can, depending on how he boards, he can become almost a true mid-range deck?
Yeah.
Or go slightly more up the curve? He can sort of choose either direction and go?
Yeah.
And I think that there's like a lot of value in that, where if your opponents are playing really linear decks and you have the ability to shift around a lot, you can sort of find your ideal role in each matchup. Yeah. Especially when you're a great player.
Yeah, I got Facebook messages all over the place asking me if I was building this deck. I think this is actually the only deck that none of us played today.
Yeah, it doesn't appeal a lot for whatever reason, but I certainly don't think it's bad.
It'll definitely be something that I test. We were playing so many other decks today. I haven't tested it yet, but it will be something, obviously, yes, I will test it. Honestly, like, I think that it doesn't... I don't think that either of... I think that this is very similar to the Goggles deck. I think that they're great. These ramp decks are great, but I don't think that they stack up at all against traditional ramp. And like, and that's a natural progression that might happen, like maybe at the GP level, where people just like are like, all right, well, none of these decks can beat a Explosive Vegetation, so we're on this deck. Especially like if people are like playing Black White and Bant Company, like, and we even tested against the Teemer deck with traditional ramp today, and it was like quite bad against it. We are just faster.
Sorry, the ramp deck was good against the Teemer deck,
The ramp deck was good against the team, like traditional ramp. And the reason is just like, it's the natural progression, right? It's like, all right, so how do I beat this green red ramp deck, this version of, you know, Teemer and Black White and Company all at once, and as well as like the green black decks? And it's like, well, you just play Explosive Vegetation. But the problem with that is then like you get got by other things. So I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about these ramp decks, but I feel like they're like, I feel like I'm gonna get trapped the way I got trapped with Goggles, where I like was so excited to play Goggles, and then it was like not that great.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the Goggles deck is that it was so light on things to do. Like,
and these decks aren't. So, like, Reduke's deck could be great.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting. It has a lot more... It's a lot less of a ramp deck as much as it is just a big mana green-red deck. Like, it's using Nissa's Pilgrimage as a card advantage engine more than a ramp spell, necessarily.
So even the Japanese list is much closer to a Delirium Slam Ishkana deck than it is, like, really...
I'm very interested by the Japanese version.
It looks interesting. It looks powerful, and when I mean, I think, didn't Kenyu Kihiro end up, like, 9-0-1 with it or something crazy like that?
Yeah, he did very well.
I mean, going 9-0-1 with anything, it shows you it's at least worth exploring further.
Yep. Coming up next, we have the Green-Black Delirium deck. This deck was... People said that... Okay, so here's why. So this deck has 29 points. It has 17 finishes. It was 12% of the day one meta, and it had an 86.5 conversion rate. The pros are saying this was the best performing deck at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, and it could be just because some of those other decks had a smaller player base, and that's kind of the, like, they're using a threshold. Like, a lot of times in sports or anything else, you know, when you're comparing raid stats, you're going to use a minimum number of attempts or a minimum number of games or whatever.
Right.
So of the decks that were commonly played, this one was far and away the best as far as day two conversion.
I would also say, though, that again, much like the Jund deck, I would be curious to know exactly what the constructed records of players all were who were on it. And I mean, I know that they did well, but you had a lot of players playing this, and they were all really good players. Yeah, like,
that is true.
I'm less impressed by day two conversion when it's in the hands of people who are, like, 2-1-ing, 3-0-ing limited.
Right, but the decks that we're looking at are specifically the decks of people who did well in constructed.
Right.
We're comparing points they earned in constructed, so...
Right, but, like, when you're looking at it being 86% for day two conversion specifically, that's all I'm remarking on.
Yeah.
And additionally, like, it got a lot of points. It also had a lot of players and a lot of very good players on it for constructed. That was a deck that certainly, like, early rounds looked dominant, and then I felt like kind of petered off a little bit as the day went on.
Yeah, that one, and also... Teemer seemed to have done that a little bit as well. Like, Owen started off with a head full of steam and then ran out of gas quite a bit.
Owen specifically, his deck had some, like, I mean, obviously it was really good in some matchups, but it was very linear for a deck. It had very little interaction for a deck that was planning on killing its opponents on, like, turn 11.
Yeah, and that is true, and that's why I kind of like the other Teemer deck more, is that it had more paths.
Well,
not necessarily more interaction, but more ways to get where you were going.
I'd just rather be more proactive if I'm not going to interact very well, I think. You know, like,
yeah,
the East-West Bowl Teemer deck, just, there are many more draws where it feels like it doesn't matter what your opponent has, they're just not really going to beat you. With Owen's deck, it feels like, I mean, yeah, it's fine unless they, like, draw Transgress the Mind and you have two Emrakuls in the bottom 20 cards of your library, and then you're... You know, kind of out of ways to win. I felt like...
Yeah, you're kind of in big trouble.
Yeah, he ended up casting Elder Deep Fiend for full retail way too much. And, like, the Gnarlwood Dryads, I'm sure were good against Bant and early in, like, day one. But, man, those were bad in some matchups.
Yeah, they looked questionable, to say the least. And it's a good transition, because next up we have Bant, which was the most played deck in the tournament. It was 19% of the day one meta, had only 53.4% day two conversion, which... is to be expected of the most popular deck, because you have people playing mirror matches a lot, knocking each other out, things like that. And also,
yeah,
there were a lot of very good players on the deck, but there were also a lot of, you know, you and me would probably have played Bant Company at this tournament.
Right. Well, or something much worse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We would have tried
if
and
we
failed.
Were smart, we would have played Bant Company.
Right. And I feel like that, you know, when you're in a combined limited and constructed tournament, again, I'm kind of hammering this point home, but I don't know that it's much of a reflection. Like, if you watch, you know, LSV, or I think it was it Takahashi who also made the top eight? I forget.
I am not going to speculate on that, because I'm terrible with names.
Fair. but, you know, there were two people in the top eight with it, and LSV especially seemed like he was not having a lot of trouble with just about any card except Emrakul.
Yeah, but you know? I saw him beat an Emrakul real easy with Tamiyo, too. So
yeah, well, I mean, obviously it goes both ways, but, like... I just mean that you know, they had plans figured out, right? Like, just because this deck was heavily played by players who probably struggled a little bit in the limited portion, you know, who weren't, you know, the Reed, Owen, Yuya of their draft pod, you know, it knocks its performance down a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that is definitely true. It's a very... It was the staple of the format, but it did end up, you know, a lot of people ended up making it very far into the tournament. It had 19 finishes and 34 points. So, I mean, it was dominant in terms of finishes. It was just, it struggled a lot on day two conversion, but...
Right. But once you got there and you knew what you were doing, people did quite well with it.
Right. But if you think, you know, they had, let's see, 86% of 12... is what? So I think that it ended up having actually maybe less people in day two than Green Black Delirium, but ended up with more finishes. So the people who right. actually played the deck very well.
Yeah, the people who are already doing well. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, the other thing is that, like, for as easy as the games are on the play where you just, you know, run over your opponent tempo wise and they never get to really play Magic, Man Company is actually an extremely difficult deck to play perfectly. Oh, and yeah. Watching like LSV navigate his way through some of those matches, it was like, He was really, really on. And I have to imagine that, you know, when you get a deck that's just the most popular choice, you know, I don't think it's insulting to people to say they're probably not playing it as well as he was.
Yeah, exactly. And LSV is a master, and there were several people, like, a lot of Channel Fireball made it very deep in the tournament with their Bank Company deck.
Right, which shows that just like anything else, you can't, you know, just show up with your, you know, whatever list you drafted up, you have to actually tune it and figure out your sideboard plans and,
yeah,
and whatever.
You have to play very well. You have to play tight, make the right decisions, not give up those little percentage points, which over a long tournament is very hard to do.
Well, especially against great players, right? It's like you don't get away with things very often at the Pro Tour, I have to imagine.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if I were playing like a 15-round FNM, I could probably have quite a bit more leeway than you would get at the Pro Tour level.
Yeah.
I think the ban was like, I think that it would be unfair to any to the deck to like pretend like it won't be a contender the entire format. Like, maybe something changes, but like, even like the most interesting thing to come out of the Pro Tour is the zombie combo, right?
So I would say, like, with Bant, it was a good choice if you made it a good choice. If you decided, this deck is great, I'm not really going to work on preparing because I can't find anything better, whatever. Like, obviously, nothing's a good choice, but whether you'd chosen Bant or something else, it probably wasn't going to go well.
Yeah, and this deck is kind of funny to me in that, basically, for three straight standard seasons, it's been a bridesmaid. It hasn't ever been quite the best deck. It's been a deck that was right up there, everybody thought it would be great, and then it was displaced by Rally, then Green-White Tokens.
Yet it still comes in at number one on our power rankings.
Yeah, this time it does seem to be holding on a little bit, but a lot of people are thinking of Delirium and Emerge decks as being the top decks.
Yeah, I think that the two best decks from the tournament, I know that the numbers don't really support it, but I think it's the Andrew Brown deck and the Green-Black Delirium deck.
Yeah. Something that is interesting that we did look into while you were stepped away is that even though Bant was a much larger percentage of day one, it was actually slightly less than Delirium in day two. There were less players playing Bant in day two than there were Delirium players, and it ended up having more finishes. So the people who did play the deck well did actually make it very far.
That was my impression of Green Black Delirium was that in the late rounds of the event, it was falling a little flat.
Yeah, because I think that John Finkel said it best. He said, you know you're doing bad at the Pro Tour when you look around and you're the only person with an Emrakul in play.
Yeah, because there were the people, and what he was saying is that people who were playing Emrakul were mostly doing very well. They were at the top tables, and he was playing Emrakul against all the people who hadn't figured out how good Emrakul was.
So I'm obsessed right now. Can somebody tell me what in the world this Naya deck is and how this isn't like a bigger story?
It's Naya Legends. It had a very high day two conversion percentage, and I think maybe the only two people that played it in day two ended up doing very well with it. This is the slightly less crazy, the Pak Yin Lai version. The other guy, whose name I do not know, was playing like way more one-ofs, like infinity one-ofs. And basically, it's a Thalia's Lancers tutor up my legendary creatures deck.
Does he also have a land he can get? Is he playing legendary
yeah,
land.
Yeah, I think that there is one legendary land in the deck, I believe.
Oh, that's great.
In the Naya deck?
Oh, maybe there's not.
There's not in this one.
I thought, there is a legendary land in Standard, right? What is it?
I don't know.
Yeah, there is a legendary land. It's the one that makes you draw and discard. And the black white Angels deck played it. But oh man, that deck is crazy. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to derail. No, I think the Bridesmaid is the perfect example, like the perfect words to describe what's going on with the, you know, with the Band Company deck that, you know, it's actually funny. We at the end of last year, Band Company was getting a ton of popularity, and Casey and I were very adamant, like, this deck is good. It is not good in this format, but it could be a great deck. Like, legitimately great. And we said, like, who knows, next year this could be the best deck.
Yeah, and then for a few weeks it was thought of as the best deck until the Pro Tour, when Green-White Tokens basically changed the format and never looked back. And then going into the Pro Tour again, it was the deck to beat. It was the most popular deck there. And it held on this week, and we'll have to see kind of if it's able to keep it up.
Today I was playtesting a lot of mono red. Between the players switching off, we went actually 9-2 against Bant Company with mono red in game ones. The numbers don't really matter as much as the feelings of the games, but there are games where Bant Company can like really take over because of the power of Spellqueller and Reflector Mage against most creature based decks. And something that I noticed is like, it's so easy to swing the game with the Collected Company with this deck that the power, like every card is individually powerful. And that's not true of a lot of the other decks in the format. And it's also the deck that I think right now has the most hours put into it by like the masses. And that's a huge boon to it.
Well, not just the masses, but the masters too, right? I mean, like the best players in the world have also put in a lot of time to like building the best version of Bant Company.
Yeah, and
where
that's
a lot
true.
Of the other decks are just like a little bit rough around the edges at times.
If there is a card that you could play in Bant Company, somebody has probably built their deck to play it and top eight at a tournament with it, so you can find a good list to optimize use of X, Y, or Z card.
And that's sweet. Like that gives you a lot of options. If you think Bant Company is a deck you're like interested in, there are so many resources available to you.
There's Spencer's version of the deck, which Matt Kling literally almost vomited when he saw today. And there's other versions that are probably better.
It is a tricky deck to build, figuring out exactly where you want to fall on numbers of different things, how many of certain interactive elements you want, if you want to be creature or spell interactive more.
I found it crazy interesting that LSV was playing one Jace.
That's all you need.
It's so weird. I was like, what is happening?
Depends on if you're a master at flipping.
I was going to say, he just plans on Collected Company into it to flip it.
If you just have it when you need it, it's perfect.
The thing about Jace and Bant Company is that it's fairly weak in this version of the deck. In the fetch land version of the deck, you could flip your Jaces a lot, so it was like playing a lot of companies. Now, it's a lot harder to do that unless your creatures are dying, which means you're probably losing, and you need something that can attack more than you need a Jace. So I think 1-2 Jace is about the right number in Bant.
It's bad until it's not, and then it wins.
Right.
Right?
So
it's sort of the, you know,
Being able to find it in the mid-delay game when it's going to be able to flip is a lot more powerful than playing a turn 2 Jace is right now. So I kind of like the idea.
Well, and every once in a while you like hit a Collected Company that's just actually two Planeswalkers, right? You're like, oh, Nissa, Jace, flip both. Plus, recast Collected Company, Reflector Mage. Oh. Yeah, that was a good Collected Company.
I want to state something. There were still zero base red decks at the Pro Tour that did well. The closest probably is Jund, followed by the... You might consider the Japanese green-red ramp deck like a base red deck.
I mean, it's playing Collective Defiance. I think that has to count for something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were certainly plenty of red decks, right? But they weren't red. Like, when you say red deck,
exactly.
Red deck wins, none of them were that.
No, I just mean, like even, like mid... I think the Jund deck gets close. But, like, I don't know. I think that in our testing today, we found certain cards in red very powerful and something that might move forward with the format. But I don't know. Let's move on to our training grounds. Every week on the podcast, we do talk about something that we hopefully will make you better at Magic or life in general. This week, don't forget that this segment is brought to you by Wasteless Games. You can check them out at wastelessgamesslc.com. You get 15% off your first order by going using the code CCMTG at checkout, and you get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good. So this week we want to talk about staying neutral in a match of Magic. Casey, what is tilt?
So
we talked about this before. In fact, we did a podcast where I put my arm at a slant on the podcast, and you and Quentin made fun of me.
Yeah, I forgot about that. We need to start making fun of him for that again, Michael. No, but tilt is just like when you're off center, right? Something happened in a match of Magic that took you out of your center. You can't think straight. You're looking at everything from a skewed perspective. You're looking uphill instead of keeping everything nice and where you need to be able to see everything clearly.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation with Matt Kling about a week and a half ago. And we talked about what changed so much in my Magic game in the throughout it. And one of the things that I said is, I didn't actually used to ever go on tilt. And then there was a PTQ that I top aided in Wyoming, and I think I've told this story on the podcast at least three times, where Matt Kling told me that my opponent was playing blue-white control in Modern. I was playing a Bloodbraid Elf, Deathrite Shaman, Lotus Cobra, Thunder Mahalkite, Jund deck, and I had destroyed the Swiss with it. And so I played on turn two, I played my Lotus Cobra, and my opponent untapped, cracked his fetch land, got a shock land, and Lightning Helix my Lotus Cobra. And I think that was the first time I ever dealt with tilt. It was I believe this might have been the first tournament I'd ever seen somebody play the burn Snapcaster blue or red deck. And I lost that match really hard. And I don't remember ever feeling tilted before that match of Magic. And ever since then, I had a real problem with it for a long time. Frustrations in Magic is something that's really hard to deal with. And, I've kind of talked about it a little bit during the Always Improving segment, but, like, right now, like, my main goals are to stay focused and really learn from kind of what Casey said, learn from every individual match and look at Magic as a running total, rather than a... Rather than putting emphasis on different things, it's really hard when you feel like you deserve to win an event. You shouldn't feel that way. Nobody deserves to win an event more than, like, that's a crazy thing to think about. Like, there are people that have said things like that. Like, I deserve to win. I think that's kind of what leads to people starting to cheat, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely true of really certain people. Some people, that's just the way they like to live their life. But some people, it's like, some people only cheat against people they think are worse than them, right? That's what, people who will consistently cheat through, like, the Swiss, but then flounder when they're playing against people who, they feel like they deserve to play against. It's like, oh, I don't deserve to get unlucky, so I'm going to cheat.
And the thing here is I think that, for me, dealing with tilt is something that I had a really hard time with for about a year. It was specifically during I won states with Jund, and I think the rest of that season got pretty rough for me. No, because that was right before the Modern. I don't know. It was right after that Modern PPDQ or actual PTQ. Holy crap! That things got tough. And the reason that it gets tough is if you let things get inside your head, you're just not centered. You're not staying neutral. Once you're upset, you're not neutral anymore, right?
Yeah, sometimes I feel like it's really easy to focus on all the times you've been unlucky or you feel like you've been wronged by something. So one of the things I try to do to keep track of things, I mean, maybe this is kind of silly, but I try to actively sort of make a mental note whenever I'm lucky in a match of Magic. Because the thing you find out is you play very much, you're pretty much lucky and unlucky the same amount. Like, your opponents top deck against you just as much as you top deck against them, and you get mana screwed just as much as they do. Like, it all kind of evens out, and if you're, active about that,
I think it can help keep you away from sort of the myopic, like, oh, woe is me. My opponents are so lucky. I run so, but, you know, like, as long as you're shuffling your deck correctly and so are your opponents, you're going to run about the same over a very large sample.
Yeah, one of the things I put in here is neutral is being in between. I put in, it's like the story of Goldilocks. You don't want to be too hot. You don't want to be too cold. You want to be just right. Like, there's certainly something to be said about playing with passion, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you want to be, like, totally disinterested or, right. Like, it's pretty hard to just care enough to actually, yeah. Like, figure out lines and stuff. But at the same time, like, I don't know. For example, I deal with anxiety, and sometimes it crops up if I'm playing matches that I care about. And, like, I always find that if I start getting too far away from just kind of level, I start missing things. And, like, the easiest way to just, like, play better is just, like, slow down, take a deep breath. All I'm doing is evaluating what's happening.
I kind of talked about that at the beginning, right? Where I talked about players who, like, really speed up their game. Now, you're not neutral when you're, like, when you think that you're going to outsmart your opponent by playing at a blazing fast speed and, like, that's part of your focus. I think that you lose a lot there. I think that you're not neutral. You are specifically trying to upset the balance of the game of Magic in an inherently different way, and you're losing focus on things and you're not neutral.
You have to be really good to get away with that kind of stuff. Basically, like, if you're not so good that you are just making zero mistakes on autopilot, you are almost certainly way better served by just going slow.
Yeah, I think that I play pretty fast Magic, but people play.
You know, I'm not saying I'm, like, going to get slow blazing play warnings, but I'm saying, like, I'm going to make sure that the decision I'm making makes sense. I don't want to. What you really don't want is the moment where you play a card and immediately, like, oh no, what did I just do? Yeah. And if you just slow down, I would say about 80 to 90% of those just go away almost instantly.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about all the time about. And I think that this is a sitting neutral thing. We talk all the time about me forgetting to counter stuff. That specifically happens either when I'm playing too fast or I'm not in the right mindset where I'm, like, upset that they have this spell and I'm like, all right, fine. And I'm like, I had a counter spell. I'm the worst.
Yeah. And if you start to, I think people conflate in their minds fast Magic with good Magic because they're like, LSCV is the fastest Magic player in the world. Right. And he's a master, but it's because he is thinking about things all the time. You know, he has thought about, like, what are the four things that my opponent could do on his turn? And if he does each of those things, what am I going to do in response? But that's, like,
speaking of which, Sean McLaren might be the slowest Magic player I've ever played against, and we weren't close to getting a draw.
Right. There's plenty of people who play at.
I should say he's one of the most decisive players ever. He's definitely not one of the slowest.
Well, and, like, you, I mean, that's deliberate. Fine.
Yeah, deliberate.
Yeah, but that's very, like, methodical. To me, the difference is, like, so I try to save time by, like, shortcutting fetch lands. Right. Yeah. Like, there are all kinds of ways to save a few seconds. Like, you can play slowly when you're actually making decisions without being slow in terms of how you're impacting the match, right? I can sideboard quickly. I can shuffle quickly. I can, you know, but when I'm actually making decisions, I'm not going to rush myself for no reason.
So, Michael, I'm going to ask you a question, then I'm going to tell a story before you answer it, okay?
Okay.
So, Michael, I want you to think about what you do to keep calm in Magic. I want you to tell the listeners how you do it. Because when I met Michael, the very first day that I met him, we were at a PPTQ, I think, at Epic Puzzles and Games, and it was around 2, I think we were both 1-0, and game 1, Michael goes 2-2 Hangar Backwalker, turn 3 Dromoka's Command, kill your guy, make tokens, after pumping my Hangar Backwalker, and then game 3, he did the exact same thing when he was on the play, and that's how we won both games. And I was like, this is the luckiest man I've ever met. And then eventually Michael makes it to the top 8. And I'm watching him play. And Michael is literally shaking. Like, this, like, I think you and I talked about Michael as we left. Like, that guy was literally out of his mind shaking.
No, I think that I wasn't playing Magic then. Because when I...
Oh, then it must have been... It was me and somebody else. We were talking about Michael. Michael's hands were like... shaking like crazy, and as we left, I was like, I don't know who that guy was, but he was like out of his mind nervous to be on that top 8. And then 2 months later, that was the only time I've ever seen anything like that. I think that it actually ended up being your, was it diabetes, or were you actually nervous that day?
It was probably like mostly anxiety related.
Okay. So with somebody who's ever, like, for me, I suffer from a pretty severe mental disorder. You have pretty bad anxiety. How do you deal with your anxiety, and how do you stay calm in a match of magic? Because honestly, I've never seen anything like that from you since then.
Like, I feel like some of it comes with just trusting yourself, like, but also knowing that, like, you're going to make mistakes sometimes, and it's just not the end of the world. Like, I'm going to do the best I can to sort of, you know, take a deep breath, evaluate the board state, and do that mechanically, right? There's no emotion in trying to decide what the best play is. When I talk about, you know, wanting emotion, like, emotion helps me with wanting to play Magic and wanting to play test and wanting to work on decks and, like, spending time on it. But I don't think emotion has a whole lot of... You just, you know, you try to evaluate the best play by thinking about, you know, numbers and what you think your opponent has. And, you know, you just try to, like, make the gameplay itself a little more mechanical. At least for me, that helps me, like, stay focused on making the best plays I can and not focused on how am I feeling right now.
So the reason that I tell that story is actually not to, it's not to, like, put Michael in the situation like, oh, Michael was nervous. It's actually the other way. I had bad thoughts and wasn't neutral in that situation. I thought, this guy got super lucky. Look how nervous he is. Like, I'm so unlucky to have lost to him. That's not even close to true. Michael's actually a pretty good Magic player. And I was not in the right mindset to have learned from that situation. It's actually completely on me. And it's funny how perception can change, like, how you think about things. And that's, I think that's what the importance of, like, all the things that we talk about on this podcast. When I look back on that tournament, I should have learned something. I don't know that I learned anything from that tournament that I can remember.
I'm pretty sure I won at least one game by, like, top decking consecutive
you
Elspeths
did.
Or
you
something.
You did win. Totally, okay, I wasn't
totally,
talking about that.
You totally top deck two Elspeths. Like that. Yeah.
But, like...
I mean, it was pretty
good. I wasn't going to bring that up.
It was pretty good. I still remember it because it was really funny. Like, but that's what I'm saying. Like, so when I'm
funny for one person.
Yeah, well, okay, but I think there's value in remembering the times you were lucky and, like, enjoying it. I don't think there's anything wrong with, like,
no,
being lucky doesn't preclude being good.
No,
right?
Absolutely,
you have
it
to
doesn't.
Be,
that's my point.
Right. So, like, my feeling is, like, if I am lucky and win, I say, sure. Wow, that was awesome.
Here's the thing: is that once that happened to me, my event was over. I was super tilted. And this is something that this is kind of what I was talking about at the beginning. Like, I've really struggled with tilt for the last couple of years. Specifically, like, when I look back at the RPTQ, I remember losing to Mike Flores and then being like, you know what? My tiebreakers are really good and X2 is going to get in and I'm just going to play the match in front of me. And it was really funny. I then won my next couple matches and... by the way, in case you're wondering how good my tiebreakers are, three of my opponents made top eight of that tournament, and two of them were my losses. So, like, my tiebreakers were real good. When I was winning my matches, you know, Alex and Quentin were, like, coming up to me, like, dude, are you so excited? I'm like, I'm not even going to talk about it. Like, if I'm in, I'm in. If I'm not, I'm not. If I'm in, I have another match of Magic to play, and that's, like, what's important here. And... that was a point where I had gotten very good at getting away from tilt, and then the Pro Tour happened, and then I had those Mulligan problems and stuff like that, and then I was tilted again, and it's this reoccurring cycle that is honestly really hard for me to break. It's a hard thing to, because it's a habit that you develop. We talked a lot on this podcast about breaking bad habits, and staying neutral it's so important, because once your emotions get involved, it's just really hard. Yeah, what does for each of us, what does keeping your emotions in check do for you, Michael?
Keeping my emotions in check allows me to play well. Like, if I am really down or really excited or really nervous, or, like, I just don't typically play good Magic when I'm all over the place emotionally. Like, if I the more level-headed and neutral I can stay, not just in the match, but, like, also just in the tournament setting in general. Like, I mean, I'll, you know, joke around or whatever and talk, but, like, I don't, you know, I'm not, like, huge on generally ranting about how lucky people were or
you know, talking about how great everything is, and, you know, just like, just kind of stay neutral and keep playing, and yeah, don't worry about it too much. Just make decisions one at a time.
Casey?
Similar. It's just like staying in the right headspace. If you get too excited about where you're going in the tournament and you forget about where you are, then you will start to make mistakes. You'll get sloppy. And if you get too down in the dumps about, you know, an early loss, and then that can invite a whole bunch more losses because you're not really focused. So it's about staying disinterested, where, like, you are in, you're focused on the game, you're free of biases, you're not thinking about the everything else that's happened. It's just you're playing a match of Magic the way that you know how to play.
Yeah, I think historically, one of the biggest level-up moments for basically our entire testing group was that open at the Red Lion Inn that I took second at, where we talked about, where Alex mentioned something to me, and it's been a topic of conversation a lot of times for us, where Alex was undefeated or something, and I was like, oh man, just three more? Or you just have to win an 8-man here, is something that I said. And then Alex is like, what are you talking about? There's six more rounds of this event? And I don't remember the exact words, but you, me, and Matt, and Quentin, and Gage, and maybe not Gage, whoever else was playtesting with us back then, like, we've talked about that a lot. And it's this moment of clarity where you realize that a few things. One of them is, why do I give a flying flabbergast that I have three rounds left before top eight if my goal is to win the event? And two, if you really look inward, your goal and something that we're really going to address in our future playtesting, something that Matt and I have discussed a lot, is that your goal is to win as many games of Magic as possible. Is that this whole running total thing is a great thing to talk about, and like, the numbers don't really matter, right? Like that 9-2 versus Band Company, that doesn't really matter. How did the matchup feel? What's going to give me the most equity in the tournament to win more games of Magic? And the thing is like, this comes up in many different aspects. When you look at people who keep hands because they're up a game.
That is the literal worst excuse for keeping a hand ever. And I hear it so much.
I actually had a conversation. I can't remember who I was talking to. They said something about that, and I was like, no, that you just never should do that. They're like, no, you got, like, that's your opportunity to take a risk. I'm like, why?
No, so like, yeah, exactly. You're in the driver's seat. Like, if as long as things go right, then you should win the match, right?
You're absolutely not neutral when that's your decision-making process, well, right? You're on a high.
That
you're
happens.
Like,
you're that chasing
happens
the
when
dragon.
You lose sometimes, too, though, because I've definitely seen people keep hands where, and certainly done it myself my fair share of times, where just, like, you feel like you're owed something because you were unlucky in the last game, and you, like, you know, keep a one-land or whatever, just like, yeah, I'm just going to, my deck's going to give it to me.
Michael, I don't know that I've ever heard somebody talk about mulligans the way that you do. All the time, you openly admit that you keep the worst hands.
I mean, I think, but like, who hasn't been there with just like keeping hands that clearly aren't going to win unless you're lucky?
You know what you should do? I mean, why do you think that I have this feeling about you? Why do you think that I, like, when I think of Michael Hinderacher, I think that guy keeps some Skechers?
Because I'm lucky, obviously.
No, that's not why I think it. Like, you legitimately will tell me stories about, like, oh, yeah, like, I got pretty lucky. I, like, kept a one-lander because, you know, whatever. And then I drew land. And it's like, I hate you. I, like, wish.
Yeah, so I think it just, I mean, I actually think I'm fairly.
Do you feel more disciplined
now? As I've
played
more, I'm definitely more disciplined with mulligans. But, like, it's mostly when you're already mulliganing that sometimes you just have to keep a hand that's, like, you know, this is
so
a bad matchup, and just, like,
true.
Screw it. Like, if it gets there, this hand is great, and if it doesn't, I lose. But if I mold a, like, five, it's just not happening.
Sure, yeah, or so, even, like, basically, there's a ton of five-card hands where you're just like, whatever. Like, we're either going to get there or
let
we're not.
Let it fly, right? You're just like, we're doing it.
Like, from this point in this game, I have to get lucky to win, so I might as well start with the top cards in my deck.
Right. Well, so I don't, but what I'm saying is like, let's rewind. I'm teasing Michael here because he makes comments about his Skechers all the time. I'm gonna start calling you Skechers. Actually, can I buy you a pair of Skechers?
If I won't wear them, but you can buy them for me. It's okay.
Anyway, my point there is, like, you are clearly on a high if you think you should keep a hand because you're up a game, right? And then at the same time, you're on a low in the situation you're talked about, right? You're definitely not in the middle if you're like, ah, I have to get, I'm going to keep this one lander on seven because my deck owes me.
Well, I think it's about, like, it's the difference between saying my deck owes me and I think, like, in this game on a mulligan, if my opponent is on seven, like, I'm just going to need to be a little fortunate, and I think this hand can get there if I am. I mean, there's, like, a difference there, and right? And one is, like, you're making a rational evaluation. It might end up being wrong, and you could be punished, but where you're coming from,
wait, hold your on. Head I is in to, the right I need to place. Rewind, because I'm not sure I quite understand what you're saying.
So what I'm saying is, like, if you were saying, I think I need to be fortunate in this matchup, so this hand is a little bit sketchy, but I'm going to keep it.
Oh, I thought you were saying that.
If you're saying,
I thought you were saying your deck owes you, and you're making a rational right, evaluation. No. Like, that's so not true.
What I'm saying is, if you're saying your deck owes you, you're just off base.
Sure,
where
it's a gambler's fallacy,
right? Like, if you are making what you believe to be the right choice, and you're thinking about it rationally, then, I mean, maybe you say, okay, well, I need to look at my decision making process because it's not working. But I think if you can avoid sort of tilting off in both directions, right? You don't want to get too excited and be like, oh, everything's going to work out great. And you don't want to get too down on things and, you know, just not, you know, just pout, basically. You know, just throw a tantrum because you're a big baby and can't handle your emotions.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's just like you're not going to play good Magic when you are so upset that you are literally refusing to do the most basic thing, which is like look at your hand and say, can this hand win?
Yeah. And I think that... Actually, you know what? I'm going to make a vow. The kind of vow that I made back in the day with tapping my lands correctly. I am not going to keep Skechers anymore.
I won't go that far.
No, I'm serious. Like, I think that if there's anything that has given me more match wins than any other decision I've made in Magic, it's that. To just take the time to tap my mana correctly 100% of the time. And I'm going to do the same thing with mulligans. I, from here out, solemnly swear that I will mulligan every Skecher.
So that feels crazy wrong to me.
You can't say that. Hold on. Time out.
You're going to mulligan every Skecher.
Hold on. Hold on. There will be a caveat. Obviously, there are things that happen when you're on going from 6 to 5 and things like that that have to change, right? But, like, I am... How many times have you kept a 4-lander with mono red on your 7? Too many. I'm never doing it again.
If the answer is more than zero, it's too many.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of hands. Like, I'm not going to keep a hand saying, if I get a little lucky, I'll be great.
I actually think the biggest difference for me has been having the mulligan rule change. When you get to scry, like, a bad 7 is so much worse than a medium 6 with a scry.
Exactly. This is happening. I'm not doing it ever again.
So all I would say is this, like, if you can rationally evaluate a hand and say, I think this hand can win and this is why I'm keeping it, go for it. Like, it might be sketchy, but if there's a reason you actually are keeping it other than just like, yeah, whatever, I think that's fine.
I'm not saying that I'll like never keep a not op, like not perfect 7 okay, again. I'm saying
that's what it sounds
no,
like.
No, I'm saying that like I'm not keeping those 4 land aggro hands. I'm not keeping those like, there's no green mana in this hand, but if I draw a forest, I'm going to be great. Like, man. I'm never again. I am not rationalizing.
If you're on the draw and it's a bad matchup.
You shouldn't keep it still. Go to 6.
Yeah.
So, like, I think as long as your declaration should be that you are going to be realistic about your mulligan decisions, not that you're going to keep no Skechers, because, like, all 5s are Skechers.
Well, right, so like, I'm going to mulligan to zero?
So somewhere so between like, Skechers
and
terrible.
I think you guys are overvaluating this vow. I'm saying that I'm going to take the same approach that I took to this mana tapping and apply it to my mulligans.
Just avoiding tilting in mulligans. I'm not going to let... Right?
But
you're not going to say...
disciplined mulligan
I'm just going to stay neutral during my mulligans.
Just going to make real decisions rather than acting like a child and throwing a tantrum. It's a bad time to throw a tantrum, too. Like, wait until after your mulligan or after the game or, like, you know, where you can go be alone, then you can throw a tantrum.
Casey, I was writing the show notes, and I said, Casey, what do you think the most important thing about staying neutral is? And you said, just remembering that it's a game.
Yeah, definitely. Magic is something that we spend a lot of time and energy on, and a lot of our listeners and a lot of other players out there do. It's very important. For some people, it's their job. But it is a game. You have to remember that it's a game and that your opponent wants to win as much as you do most of the time. And there's...
why are you laughing?
I don't know. I'm just envisioning sitting down across from an opponent who's like, eh. I mean, I'm like,
I only paid $70 for this GP.
I'm like 30% committed to winning, but you look more like you're the 70% kind of guy. So,
like, I've also had people who wanted to win way more than I did. Right, like I remember top eighting a PPTQ, a limited PPTQ forever ago, and I played against like a 12-year-old kid in the quarterfinals, and the amount of like our excitement share, he had 99% of or more, and like it was, yeah. So I definitely, he wanted to win way more than I did, but in general that's not going to be true. So you have to just remember that. It is a game, and things are going to happen. Like, it's a game that's designed to have unpredictable elements, you know? Sometimes your opponent is going to top deck the Emrakul even after you just thought seized them. Sometimes they're going to top deck a land when they haven't drawn a spell all game, and you're going to win. Like, it's going to cut both ways, but it's just a game. You can't get all upset about everything that goes against you, because... Like, what was a savage top deck for your opponent to beat you? It's, you know, a hilarious good beat story for them. Like, they're like, oh, I was no outs. Then I just, like, flipped over the top card of my deck, and it was Terminus. It was amazing.
Well, and it's kind of zero sum, right? Like, it's not like you have so many more bad beat stories than good beat stories. It's just, like, if you let yourself get in the mindset.
It depends on who you are. Some people literally create them.
But this is what I'm saying, right? You're creating them. It's like, you top deck things just as often as your opponent's top deck things, right?
Yeah, and like, yeah, it's actually, not, you know, it's what? Not justice I would when like you to, top deck
I would
and
like to talk
a,
about this.
A crime when your opponent
right,
does.
Right, this is it. That's the mindset. It's not like that people can't count. It's that when they did it, it's because they played to their outs. When their opponent did it, it's because they're super lucky.
Yeah, actually, that's a conversation Matt Kling and I have had a lot. For a long time, Matt Kling thought I was the luckiest player in the world. Then he recently was like, you know what? You just played your outs more than anyone I know. It's actually something that Brian Hawley taught me. He's a developer at Wizards of the Coast. But I want to talk about the thing that you guys were just saying. There is a player in Utah there was a match that I got furious at him at. It was actually at a PPTQ that I beat him at. And he went off about the number of lands he drew. And Casey, if you remember, I literally was like, I have three more lands in play than you right now.
Yeah, I do remember this.
And I like went off on him. I was like, you need to like calm down. You did not get that unlucky. Like, you're playing Ojutai's exemplars and you lost. I'm sorry. But like, do not go off on me about how unlucky you are. Because he does it every match. And you know what? It is unfun. It is unfun to play against those people. You know, everybody gets frustrated once in a while, right? And no one is going to take that away from you. You are allowed to get frustrated. And if somebody takes it away from you, like, forget them. They don't have that right. You can be frustrated.
Yeah, I mean,
but
you can
at some
be...
point, you have to be realistic. You are not unlucky every game of Magic you play.
That is statistically improbable.
It's actually statistically impossible.
It's just improbable. Nothing is impossible.
You're telling me that there is a human being out there who's played over X number of games of Magic and has gotten unlucky every single time. I mean, that's true.
One.
There's a hypothetical player out there that could exist. And I might know who it is, actually.
I mean, but it's also about...
It's also a couple people it could be.
It's about how you handle your frustration, too. Like, if you are upset, but, like, are also composed... And are upset, rat. Like, it's okay to be upset when you lose, but don't take it out on your opponent. No one wants to be the guy who, like, is having to listen to his opponent whine and whine and whine every turn of a game. Like, that's just not fun for anyone. It's not fun to whine, and it's not fun to be whined at.
Think of all the times that you have watched your opponent sulk and felt so, so unhappy. Like, in the first round of the PPTQ on Saturday, I actually, in the first game, actually didn't draw a spell. And my opponent had no idea that had even happened. I, like, conceded and scooped up my cards. And, you know, he was, like, really confused. And I had ended the game with four lands in my hand. And he, like, was confused as to what I was doing. And, like, he had no idea that I didn't draw a spell in that game. I wasn't visibly upset, and that's something that's staying neutral. That's what we're talking about doing. Where
and it's okay to acknowledge it, right? Like, if your opponent is like, "Oh, it's, you know, what happened there for you?" You can say, "Oh, I drew a lot of lands," but like, don't
don't make your opponent feel bad about the order that your deck was in, because that just seems silly.
We were playing.
They're the one who cut it.
Yeah, we were playtesting a game today at the very end of our playtesting session. Austin was playing Mono Red and I was playing Bent Company, and he just killed me. And he was like, "What happened that game?" I was like, "I just drew a lot of lands." He goes, "Oh, and like." That's the kind of thing that you want to talk about. Like that's the image you want to present. Like,
it's okay to talk, right? You just don't want to be like. It's okay to talk with. You just don't want to be talking at people.
Yeah,
right? Like, especially I don't want to be yelling in your general direction about.
Think of it this way: you don't know what's happened a lot of the time, right? Your opponent has three cards in hand. You're sitting there like, oh, they're so lucky they have three cards, like. I don't know.
Not all cards are created equal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Some of them are Ojai's exemplars.
So I actually had an opponent yesterday in the GPT who in like going like in the beginning of game two of our match.
Oh, is this the guy? Is this who I think it is?
It was my semifinal.
Is it the Spark player? Oh, okay. I thought it was your first your
no.
I love him. He's my new best friend.
Yeah, he's great. But the guy that was playing in the semifinals, as we're starting game two, Spencer comes up and asks him if he's playing in GP Portland, and
because I don't know that I want this story told in the podcast.
Well, no, so because Spencer and I both think that it's a GPT for Portland because we're what you might call idiots or whatever. But my opponent is just like. So annoyed that he's asking him this question because it seems so irrelevant to him. And he's like, yeah, I am. Like, can I help you? Like, I'm in the middle of a match.
So hold on. So I had already won. I was on to the finals of this GPT because I had won my first. I had won my quarters and my semis. And so I, like, was curious because, like, oh, if he wins, like, I wonder if he'll scoop to me so that I can just get the buys if he's not going. And so I'm like, hey, man, are you going to Portland? And he looks at me. He's like, yes. I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, why? It's like, you know, because, like, I need the buys. If you, I actually think I asked him. I said, do you have buys? He goes, no. I goes, oh, okay. So, like, yeah, we can play it on the finals if you win. And he goes, this is not a GBT for Portland. I was like. I looked at the owner and I was like, what is this a GPT for? He's like, Indianapolis? And I'm like, Blasted Gelts, I hate you so much.
So, what did Austin do? He had nothing to do with that.
Austin told me it was a GPT for Portland. He was going to go play in it because he thought it was.
Oh, I see. Okay. Anyway, so this poor guy, like, he gets so on tilt. Like, he eventually shakes it off, but he's so on tilt at the beginning of our game two that, like, he forgets to draw a card on his first turn. And I'm like, so like I go do my thing, you know, pass the turn, and then he goes and like he just like he's like land pass, and I'm like counting his cards, and I was like, I have a question, and then he's like, if you're about to ask me if I'm gonna play in GP Portland, and I was like, no, did you draw a card this turn? And he's like, oh no, and he like picks up his land, and he's like, okay, no, still the same land, go, but like. After that, it was fine, but, like, he was very, very tense at the beginning of this match over, like, something so silly. Like, you weren't trying to tilt him. He was just, like, so confused by the fact that you asked that question that it made him, like, unable to play Magic.
Existentially uncomfortable.
Yeah, so, like, don't let, you know...
That's not being neutral.
Right, exactly. Like, don't let little things like that cause you to, like, go completely off. And, like, he was a nice guy and everything, and, you know, we finished our match, and...
Don't forget to draw cards on your first turn. Like, yeah, exactly. Nothing's like, happened yet. It's not... There's no good excuse.
Exactly. Like, just... If some weirdo comes up and asks you totally irrelevant questions to your match...
Ask
like,
him if his name is Spencer.
Don't let it tilt you.
First of all, so Casey also thought this GPT was for Borland.
Yeah, that's why I said we're idiots.
Patreon Chris...
Hansen?
Yeah.
He's the one who told me that and convinced me to play in it.
So, you know, patrons of the show are really putting in the good work.
he just wanted an event to fire.
Chris is, like, legitimately one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Yeah, he's very cool. I've really enjoyed, you know, all of my interactions with Chris.
Yeah, guy's, like, way too cool. And I got very lucky to beat him at the GPT, and... he's all in on my blue red spirits deck, which I really obviously makes me feel, you know, warm and fuzzy inside.
Very cool. But yeah, he's other than this one black mark on his record of convincing me to play in a GPT for GP Indianapolis, I think Chris is great.
This really moves him up in my book. I don't know about you guys. This
honestly, like, it's one of those things. When you think about where you are right now in your match of Magic, are you too high? Are you too low on what's going on? Is it because either of those things can really dictate where you're at in your mental state? You know, what you want to do is kind of build on a good attitude. How many times have we talked about doing it right? This isn't just a mindset with playtesting. It's something you should always have. It's this game. It's not just this game, right? It's this game. It's the next game. It's the one after that. It's really every game that if you... That's kind of like why I decided to just take that vow I just took, right? You're laughing, but I'm actually kind of serious. I hope that I can never keep a blatantly ridiculous hand ever again.
No, that's fair. Actually, every time you say something like that, though, I'm reminded of Marshall and How I Met Your Mother. He's like, hey, everyone, I need your attention, please. I have a sweeping declaration to make.
What is it?
He does it a bunch of times, but he never follows through on them. And I think this is the only time that I ever remember you making one. But you say it a lot. Even if you're not actually making a vow, you talk about it a lot, and that's what it always reminds me of.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I'm actually serious with this one, and I hope that I can just build upon... I want to always be improving.
If you'd made this vow earlier, like before Oath came out, they could have made Oath of Spencer.
Yeah, that's my oath. That's fair.
So it somebody, really,
also we have really listeners. Medium
legendary enchantment.
Also, if you make an Oath of Spencer card, don't use an unflattering picture. I really don't want to deal with that.
I mean, if you need an unflattering picture, I have some I can send you.
That video is deleted.
Maybe. Nobody else has ever seen it. I don't know that it's deleted.
Honestly, I want to be in the mindset of always improving. I want to... There's nothing that has brought me more joy in my life than my marriage and this podcast, really. And this like the attitude that we've brought, and I want to build on that. I want to be neutral. Like, think of how many times in your life something like this could help you, right? Where you enter a conversation that could be really tough with a mindset that's not combative, that's not too excited or too sad. Because that's honestly how your feelings are, right? If you, like, entered a conversation with your boss thinking that they were going to promote you, and instead the conversation turned out to be like...
You suck.
No, not even just that, but, like, something that you should be excited about, right? How many times have we entered a conversation with somebody where we expected one thing, got something else that was probably pretty good, but it wasn't what we expected, and then we're upset about it later?
Sure. Like, if you think that you want a free pizza, but you only want free breadsticks, right? Like, it's a downgrade, but it's still free breadsticks.
Right. I don't know where that came from.
It's a relatable example, Spencer. It's a relatable example.
Because you were getting rambly. I was trying to put it in a nutshell.
No, that's fair. But I think that it's... I actually think that it's important. And I don't know. I think that this is something that I can learn from and that I really want to. Don't forget to share the Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. The next goal is to upgrade equipment. Whether that's Casey's mic stand or not is up to you guys. I was thinking like a GoPro and some stuff to actually do videos at the man cave
a GoPro during a tournament.
The answer to that, I believe, is yes.
Man, that would be like the weirdest thing ever. I've never thought of that before. I'm having an existential crisis.
So the next goal is to upgrade equipment. We really appreciate everything that we get. We got so many messages the last 2 weeks from people. I really appreciate everybody who like comes forward and says, you know, once I have the money, I'll become a Patreon. The show is free for a reason. We understand that everybody's not in the situation that they can afford it. You know, you can cancel at any time. If you want to go donate for a couple months, like, feel free to do it. Like, we're not asking for a forever commitment. We really appreciate everything that anyone can do, and it means the world to us every time. I have a couple things that I want to say on this podcast. Before we get to like where you can find us and stuff, obviously we don't do shout outs anymore, but I'm sure everybody on this cast wants to give a shout out to Danny.
Yeah.
Except for Michael, who actually hates you, Danny. He actually literally thinks that you're the scum of Earth. That's not true. I made that up.
I feel like I'm getting signed up for things I'm not. It's like there's like the bad version of spam mail.
There's two things about that. First of all, if you came to the meetings, you wouldn't get signed up for things.
That's true.
Second of all, is regular spam mail the good version of this?
Okay, the worst version of spam mail.
Okay, thank you.
So Danny Cartho,
Cathro.
I call him Cartho every time. Danny Cathro, Chatty
McChatterson. Well, now Danny hates you.
That's fair.
That's right.
I also gave him a nickname. That's Danny the Mouth.
Also, we've made several mistakes. We should be calling him Danny Chatro.
Oh, that's a boom. Danny the Mouth Chatro? I like that a lot.
No, I feel like that's doubling up.
We'll
workshop it.
It's a two for one. Wrestler, it's one name, two jokes.
If he ever becomes a pro wrestler, like we're going to be able to just rattle off like six jokes.
So for those who don't know, Danny's the guy that was talking to Owen Turnwald in the last round that Owen won for top eight after Owen had already left the...
Talking at him.
Yeah, talking at him.
Towards him.
Yeah, across the room.
I think we're selling Danny a little short. He also thoroughly outplayed Owen in game one. Where Owen thought he had a way to win, and he did not have a way to win.
No, it was impressive. Honestly, sweet. Like, just shout out to Danny, right? Like, cashing your first pro. He made $5,000 and qualified for another pro tour. Like, go him, listener of both the podcasts. Just, like, really nice guy. I just want to give a shout out to him. I'm sure everybody on the cast does. Where can people find you guys?
You can find me on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst.
Or there's a new food truck in Utah that specifically sells grilled cheese sandwiches. So if you want to find Casey, he'll be right there.
That's extremely unlikely. I honestly, fun fact, I actually did used to like grilled cheese sandwiches fine. I haven't had one in 2 years.
Just the harassment.
An exaggeration of how long it's been, but it might be pretty close to that by now.
No, it's about that. It's maybe a year and a half.
Yeah,
it's a year and a half plus.
Yeah, since I started making fun of you.
So you just not eat them out of like.
Yeah, actually, seeing one makes me angry.
Yeah, so I actually think that he might have made grilled cheese like 2 days in a row before I made the joke, and I don't know that I've seen him make one since.
I have not had one since.
Yeah.
That's dedication.
No, like.
A man who will go the extra mile.
Like, it actually. Seeing a grilled cheese sandwich,
grilled cheese story
makes me mad.
You know what sounds delicious?
I want to punch it out of
people's mouth. It's a grilled
cheese sandwich. I like grilled cheese sandwiches, and I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Where can people find you?
I mean, you can find me lounging on my couch eating a grilled cheese sandwich, but you can also find me on Facebook in the Facebook group, or you can search me on Facebook, Michael Hinderacher, or you can find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. The number of requests that I get at Spencer Howland. Oh, actually, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, if you friend request a Spencer Howland that isn't Spencer Stephen Howland, it's somebody else, and they probably have a different face.
Yeah,
and they won't know the answer to most of your magic questions.
Or they could just be great.
Yeah, it's true. We don't know.
Yeah. They've probably become good at magic by this point.
You can also find me on Twitter at Spencer13H, on MTGO at Spencer13Dev, where you can ask to join the clan. You can join the conversation every week by using the hashtag WouldThatBeGood on Twitter, going to reddit.com/r/CCMTG. Join the Facebook group. Just ask for an ad. I'll be happy to add you. If you're going to sell sunglasses.
It's a great place to sell sunglasses.
let us know beforehand. One of the best ways to get, if you want an instant ad, like the podcast on Facebook, the Constructive Criticism Podcast, and then ask for a join on the Facebook group, and you'll get an instant ad. Especially if you want to sell sunglasses, it's a great way
to
do it.
The perfect crime.
Yeah. You can join the clan by messaging me or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE. You gotta clap louder.
No.
I'm scared that I traumatized people clapping for Danny earlier. Like, I have no idea what that's actually going to sound like. So, you should, like, if that almost killed you but didn't quite kill you, let us know so I won't ever do that again. And if it actually killed you, I apologize.
Yeah, it looked really weird on the sound wave. Yeah. It looked really,
it
like,
scared me.
Crisp,
so, like, I don't
spikes,
really...
like, straight up, straight down, like, yeah. No wave.
So, we'll see. Yeah, just let me know if I almost killed you.
And also... Hopefully it's fixed by now. I sent YouTube a message. But I want to give a shout out to the listeners. We got our YouTube channel. So if I type in youtube.com/constructedcriticism, boom, we have our own YouTube channel now. Thank you, everybody who subscribed.
And just to clarify, because you didn't say it, but you typed it. It's youtube.com/c/constructedcriticism, right?
Yeah, and you can go subscribe there for weekly testing videos. And starting probably in a week and a half, unless you want to do it like on Tuesday or something, Michael, weekly deck text with me and Michael.
Yeah, like we were planning on doing one, and then we just tested for like 8 hours instead. So
were we planning on doing one this week?
That was my understanding, but like, yeah.
All right, we can do one after. I don't care.
No.
That's no. He does not want to do one today. That's actually good. I won't have time to edit it. But, yeah, so weekly testing videos with Matt, weekly deck techs with Michael, and hopefully more content to come as the Patreon grows, and we're really excited about the future of the YouTube channel. It's like one of our main goals for the next 12 months. So please subscribe at Constructed Criticism, or at youtube.com/c/constructedcriticism. All right, what did you guys learn this week, Casey?
I mean, it's something that I had not thought on, but I didn't realize prior to this that there were actually more Delirium decks than Bant Company decks in Day 2 of the Pro Tour, so I was kind of underselling Bant Company's Day 2 performance quite a bit.
Michael?
I felt like I learned quite a bit about just sort of how different... I thought it was really interesting to look at like how different teams and different groups of people kind of attacked what they thought the Pro Tour metagame would be, and sort of varying levels of success. Some did really well and some did okay, and some did really well despite their decks seeming not that great. So I don't know.
I learned a few things. I learned that Michael won't wear a pair of Skechers if I buy them for him. I learned also
that's a really important lesson, by the way.
Yeah, like, that Michael has
taste. There's a Skechers store like down the street.
I find that so bizarre.
Isn't it weird?
Proximity is not the issue.
Every time I see that store, I'm like, that's a Skechers store? Anyway.
It has to be a mob front, right?
You actually have to be over 70 to get in.
Or under 7.
Yeah.
They have two sections.
And you get shoes that roll.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
Anyway. Heelys? Do Skechers make Heelys? I don't know.
It
feels like they could.
No, don't they make the ones that are like actually rollerblades? Do you remember when those came out?
No.
Yeah, there's like... There's literally wheels inside your shoes, and there's a button, and then there's two rollers.
Oh, I do remember that. Those were really cheap, like really cheaply made. But
hold on,
expensive.
Did you own Heelys, Casey?
No.
You seem like the person that would own Heelys.
I don't know why you think that.
I don't know. You just got that Heely look on you. I learned that Casey loves Heelys. The new grilled cheese. Not really. I'm just kidding. Don't hate you. Don't go burn a pair of Heelys. No, but I really learned that I keep too many bad hands. As we were talking about that, the reason that I like wanted to make a declaration is I don't give a flying flabbergast what Michael or Casey or you guys think, but I want to hold myself accountable for like terrible decisions that I make. So are you drinking to that?
Nope, just drinking.
Okay. I hope that this podcast was enjoyable. I hope that you all have a wonderful week. The next podcast might be different.
It's going to be 14 hours long.
It's not true.
We're going to start recording.
No, it's going to be 16. I thought we were,
we're
going
to start recording as soon as we get on the freeway, and we're going to go all the way to Portland, including bathroom and fast food breaks.
Just long pauses.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to do...
It's mostly going to just be instructing West how to play a deck.
Yeah. I think that we're going to do a special two-parter. We'll do one for the patrons only, where they can either listen to us on the way there or the way back. We'll have everybody in the car. So Austin will be on an episode of Concerted Criticism.
That's really too bad.
He's already been on one. He said like at least 3 words.
Yeah. So we'll have Austin, West, and Matt with us. And maybe we'll have Matt drive so he doesn't talk. Because, you know. Oh, maybe we'll have Austin drive so he doesn't talk.
Yeah, that seems powerful.
Yeah, there we go. We figured it out. Austin will not be on the episode. But no, so we'll see what we can do. But I think that it'll be a special episode next week that'll be very different, and we'll just talk about like preparation for the tournament, how we're getting ready for it. And then we'll do one on the way back where we talk about like how we did, what we thought of the tournament, what decks did well, stuff like that. And it will be very different, but hopefully you guys enjoy it. It'll be a completely new thing. The sound quality will not be the same. Let us be clear. We'll be in a car. I will probably
be recorded on an old wax cylinder.
All right. Thank you everybody for listening, and we will see you guys all next week. Bye.
Magic.